Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again.
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welch.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
Welcome in. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. I'm your host, Scott Bogman, and it's Friday, so I'm joined by my friendo, Nicholas Ian Allen. Nick Allen is the owner and proprietor of CFB Winning Edge. You can follow him on the Twitter at CFB Winning Edge and check out his Patreon, patreon.com/CFB Winning Edge. You guessed it. Nick, how's it going? You staying safe out there?
Yeah, trying my best. Staying home, which for me is not much different than normal, but trying to do my part and social distance, all that good stuff. How about yourself?
Yeah, you know, I left my house for the first time in like 5 days, I believe, today. So that was weird. You know, just had to make sure that my car was still going to fire up and all that stuff, because
sure.
I'm not used to going that long without going somewhere. So, but went out, got myself some lunch, and washed my hands repeatedly. And all that stuff. Don't have a mask yet, but I do have one on the way. Have you gone that far to get your mask and all that stuff?
So that's a weekend project. My wife has got some patterns downloaded and ready to go. We had to make an order for a piece on our sewing machine, so had to wait for that to arrive. But we're good to go by this weekend. We'll have some masks. Got to make a run to the grocery store soon, so need them quickly.
Luckily for me, I'm going to be able to pull my hair back into a big knot, and then I can do the, I won't have to have the things around my ears all day, because I know that's what's been driving a lot of people nuts, is, whatever the little cords are going around your ears and irritating your ears. So, luckily I've got enough hair, and, I grow it out and donate it, but I'm at the point where it's like, I don't know, I need a foot, and it's about 8 inches right now. So, but it's long enough to pull back and put in a big old knot, so I can use that as my back piece. But I don't. The Welsh got the same mask that I got, and they're supposed to come tomorrow for me. And he said that they kind of suck and they don't fit his face. So I'm hoping maybe I have a smaller face or something or sharper chin. I don't know. I don't know why they don't fit, but hopefully they do. But you guys know what we do on this show on Fridays. We talk college fantasy football, and I figured we would start with just talking some normal college football because, of course, Nick, I'm sure that you saw the Arizona plan for baseball, and that has been met with a lot of controversy right now, probably, I think, more because we're still in the middle of all of the craziness and all that stuff going on. But there has been a lot of college football rumblings, a lot of people saying that, you know, they don't think that the season's going to start on time, or some people just saying, look, if we start in November, I think we could still get the season done, to go off without a hitch, that kind of stuff, maybe just pushing it back. But the biggest discussion that I've seen right now is ramp-up time. And I've heard Penn State AD Sandy Barber, she said that it would take 60 days. But I've heard some people say, look, as long as we're in and doing our, training camp or preseason stuff or whatever it is at the beginning of August and the game start at the end of August, we should be fine with about 3 weeks of ramp-up time. So you're a former coach, Nick. So from that perspective, I know there's no one good singular answer, but what is the amount of ramp-up time that you would say, as a former coach, I want at least this much?
Well, in that situation, want and need, I guess, are two different things. I've seen a lot of people share the, you know, 60 days, 2 months, give or take, is sort of the minimum they would ask for. And I think that's probably the maximum anybody could hope for at this point. Just, you know, we certainly don't know exactly what's going to happen. But if anything's going to start somewhat on time, I think 2 months to prepare, where you've got 30 days for, you know, workouts, conditioning, those sort of things, and then 30 days getting into, you know, getting on the practice field. I think, though, that's sort of probably best case scenario for coaches at this point. I think that, you know, 6 weeks probably, if I were a coach, would be about the minimum I would truly want. And I guess if, you know, it's possible that a month, perhaps. I know that, you know, Division III, they don't have spring practice. They only have about a month to prepare for the season. Guys, you know, come on campus around August 1st and then are ready to, you know, take the field for games by the end of the month. So it has been done, but I think it, you know, for the most part, the biggest issue on my mind is you've got guys spread out so far away from, one, the coaching staff, where they can keep a really, you know, a good eye on what it is that they're doing. And two, everybody's sort of in a different situation as far as the type of equipment they've got on hand. I mean, some guys might be stuck just doing, you know, push-ups and sit-ups and running around the neighborhood, where other guys have access maybe to more of a in-home gym or, you know, something where they're able to get a more in-depth advanced workout similar to what they might get on campus. And you've got sort of a wide range of guys that are going to be, you know, just based on what they're able to do, they'll be at different stages of conditioning, endurance, strength, and all of that. So it's going to be difficult to kind of get everybody on the same page for that early acclimation period, because, you know, you want guys to do certain wind sprints. Well, depending on how your players were able to work out, and then, you know, work ethic, of course, is an issue, whether they went out and did the sort of running that was suggested. It's not mandatory.
Yeah,
at this
accountability.
Point. Right. But right. So just sort of all the different the wide range of levels where people are able to work out and what they're going to be able to work out, it's going to take a little bit of time to sort of get everybody on the same page so that you can actually get a plan in place that meets the needs of your players without pushing them too hard, too fast, because that's going to be an issue. If people are getting back on campus at the height of summer, and you know, June is sort of the earliest that seems at all feasible, that's probably a little too early. It's probably going to be, if we're lucky, July, and guys are, you know, going through the motions with conditioning drills and things like that at the height of summer. You have a real issue on your hands as far as, you know, potential health problems that could come up if guys aren't ready to give maximum effort in a situation like that. So it's a long-winded way of saying there's so many different variables that it's hard to tell. You would obviously more time, you would prefer more time to less time. 2 months is probably the best you could hope for, and as little as a month to prepare really would be pushing it, but probably would be the minimum that you'd be able to get guys ready.
So 2 months ideal, 6 weeks is what the minimum you would want, but we've seen it done in a month. That's kind of the answer.
I think so. I mean, high schools, a month is feasible at the Division III level. They do it, you know, year in, year out. So it's certainly possible, but it's not ideal.
Yeah, and I think it, you know, the early play, I think we should expect to be sloppy on pretty much every sport at this point, you know. You know, it's not, I don't think it's all going to look like Thursday night football games or anything. You know, you're not the biggest NFL fan, but if you compare a Sunday game to a Thursday game, and I'm sure you've seen this at the high school level and college level and everything else, the quality is just terrible on Thursday.
Sure.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's nice to see a nationally televised game on Thursday night, but I've said for a couple years now, They need to do those games for teams that are coming off bye weeks only. So you're going to see a little bit of that Thursday nightish football to begin the year because, you know, I don't imagine, like Nick said, I don't imagine that most teams are going to get 2 months. You know, we're going to be lucky to get 6 weeks. And this is all contingent on the season actually starting at the end of August like it usually does. Anyway, that could all just be pushed back. And so, you know, for the reasoning of getting more ramp-up time as well. But it's harder to do that kind of stuff because of the venues that teams play and the schedule and not wanting to play too much over winter break and all that stuff. But right now, I think, you know, it's kind of all hands on deck and all possibilities are on the table right now. Yeah. You can't take anything off because it's such a crazy time and such an original problem. You know what I mean? It's something that we just have not faced before. You know, college football was not that prominent in 1918 during the Spanish flu. So,
right.
But it's been interesting seeing what people say. I mean, obviously on the CFB Winning Edge podcast, we talked a little bit about Mike Gundy's comments and all that stuff with him wanting to get right back at it. And of course, I think the next day he had to say, well, you know, maybe I wasn't taking into consideration all this stuff. It's like, wow, Mike Gundy said something outlandish. Mm-hmm. That's never happened before. It's the first I've heard of it. But there's been a couple other things here, Nick, and I like this article series on The Score. If you guys haven't checked out thescore.com, it's the app that I use most of the time to follow along on, you know, just scores on so many different sports that I follow because I do college football, basketball, baseball, NFL, you know, all the stuff. So it's kind of one centralized area for me to see all the different scores from all the sports, but they have articles as well. And this article I really liked. It was three things about changing each sport during the hiatus. And the one that they did for college football, I liked these. Number one was institute a one-time transfer rule. So the transfer portal will probably be gone. You can transfer at any point that you want to a different school. No one can block you, but you only get it one time is the basic rule there. The second one was finalize name, image, and likeness plans so that we can get an NCAA game. And, Nick, I know that that's got to be, you know, that one would probably be number one on your priority list, right?
It's up there. I certainly do miss the game and getting that taken care of in addition to being, you know, more fair to players and getting them a little bit more of the, you know, their fair share certainly would be a positive benefit for me. You're right.
And then the third one was abolish the kickoff. And that's fine. To be honest, I feel like that's the way the NFL and college football are going to be going within the next 5 years anyway. I think we'll still get punts, but I think the kickoff is going to be dead. I think it's going to be take the ball at the 20 and go from there because that's the most violent play in all of football is the kickoff because, you know, we've already eliminated the running start and all that stuff and different types of wedge blocks and all of that. So I think just getting rid of the kickoff overall is probably something that's going to happen anyway. So for me, I wouldn't put it on my list. But Nick, if you had to make three changes, or if you could make three changes to college football, what would your three be to start out here?
Well, I think one and two on this list are probably going to be high on my consideration. I mean, I think one-time transfer makes sense. You know, I transferred schools. I know a lot of us out there that, you know, didn't play college football, transferred, went to multiple schools, and it's not really fair in my mind, for a player who's 17, 18 years old when he decides where he's going to go to school to be locked into that and be punished, basically have to sit out a year, if he made the wrong decision. And so I think it's, certainly fair. It's something that, I would put pretty high on my list. I think it makes sense, and I think it's something that hopefully will get done sooner rather than later. And the same goes for the name, image, and likeness. I mean, I think that's just an issue of fairness, especially at the FBS level and you know, these elite programs who, I mean, so you brought up the Mike Gundy comments. I mean, one of the things he said was needed to get revenue basically running through the state via Oklahoma State and other, you know, other similarly powerful college football programs. And if these players are the driving force really to ticket sales and TV revenue and all these sorts of things, then I think it only makes sense to give them a little bit more of a piece of the pie. And I think things are moving in that direction. And so these two would certainly be on my list. The kickoff, it's a dangerous play, and it's one that it makes sense to take a good hard look at it. The XFL did some interesting things with the kickoff, and I wouldn't hate that if things were to move that direction, especially in the, you know, player safety, keeping that in the forefront of your mind. But I would be a little bit sad. The kickoff is something that you mentioned I have a coaching background. I mean, we did a good job. I coached at the high school level, pretty high level high school in the state of Georgia. Was lucky enough to coach with a lot of guys that
anywhere
were college
in Georgia
coaches.
Is a high level. I mean, come on, yeah, they love their football.
Yeah, and we were, you know, we were pretty good, and the coaching staff, like I said, was very, very fortunate to have a lot of really great coaches, and we took special teams very seriously. We had multiple, you know, surprise onside kick operations that we had a lot of success with, and for me, that was a really fun thing to do, was sort of take advantage of a part of the game that maybe some other teams on our level didn't put as much time or energy into. And it's an area where you can get an edge. And I'm always looking for an edge when I'm, you know, when football is involved. So that would be a little bit sad to see it go by the wayside, but it makes a certain amount of sense. But some other ones that I would be thinking about would I'm coming around to expanding the playoff a little bit. I
mean, yes,
seems
yes.
About for a long time I was against it. I wasn't even really for a 4-team playoff for most of the time. I'm in a lot of ways, in a college football sense, I'm pretty old school, so I even liked the, you know, when the bowl tie-ins were the Big Ten and the Pac-12 went to the Rose Bowl no matter what. I just thought it was so interesting and different for college.
We're coming up on a break, but I literally, Nick, thought we were going to fight about that, because we've had talks about that, and you're like, I believe as late as last year, you're like, I don't really want to expand this, and I could not be less behind that thought process. But when we come back from this break, Nick and I will talk about potential expanding the college football playoff. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. Stick with us. We'll be right back after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you, because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In this league.
Somebody royally forked up. Somebody forked up. Why can't I say fork?
If you're trying to curse, you can't hear.
It's full shirt.
Holy mother forking shirt balls.
Welcome back. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. Remember, you can follow us at Bogman Sports on Twitter for me and at CFP Winning Edge for Nick. And Nick, right at the top here, just promote everything that's going on at CFP Winning Edge and everything that you're working on.
Well, so basically what we do at CFP Winning Edge, if you've never heard of us before, I like to think of us sort of as a college football preview outlet, sort of like a magazine or what have you, that we have the ability to update everything that we do basically on a daily basis. So in the summer, you go and get your glossy college football magazine, and before you even get home with it, it's usually out of date. I mean, guys transfer, their injuries, all sorts of things, and we, through everything we do is online. We have a set of Google Sheets that we make available to our patrons that include depth charts, individual player ratings for all 130 teams. We've got a schedule portion where we do projected point spreads. We do talent advantages. You can match up each team's offense to each team's defense and see how they stack up. And we've also got returning production numbers that go deeper than pretty much anything you're going to find out on the internet. You'll be able to look team by team and see exactly, the percentage of yardage and attempts and all that for each team. We're in the final days of getting all 130 teams done for returning production, but all of the Power Fives available to our patrons now. But basically we just try to go as in depth with everything as possible and be able to provide as up to the date as possible, just based on individual player movement and injuries, things like that. We really try to stay on top of everything college football and pass that along to our patrons.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if you threw it in there, but I believe 80,000 wide receivers and running backs ranked on your CFF list. So
just 1,000,
right? 1,000, just 1,000 ranked wide receivers. That's all. So, and I'm to blame for that. And look, so I don't think I should apologize to you because you love it, but maybe I should apologize to your wife and loved ones and friends that, I introduced you to college fantasy football. And, you caught that like it was COVID-19 and ran with it. So, but we were talking about before the break, changing things in college football, because the pause has kind of let everyone kind of sit back and reflect, and a lot of people are thinking about changes. I mean, even before this stuff, the NBA specifically, we were hearing from owners I can't remember his name, but the owner of the Hawks, which I think they now call the Board of Governors, but the governor of the Hawks, he was talking about potentially moving the season start time back to December. So the NBA isn't competing against the NFL for a big chunk of the year. You're getting the last 3-4 weeks of the regular season, plus the playoffs. But, on Thursday night, when, like I said, even though the games are bad on Thursday night football, that is going to outdraw your Pelicans Lakers game. It just is, it's just the way the world goes. The NFL is the biggest of all the sports in this country. Obviously, soccer around the world, which football, that's popular more around the world. But in the U.S., the money goes through the NFL first. So I think that would be smart. And the Score over there, thescore.com, put out a couple articles on three things that they would change. And you brought up my favorite one of all of them is the expanded college football playoff. Now, I understand that there are logistical issues of are these games going to be bowl games, because since there's only three games to get to a champion right now, there's the two playoff games and the one championship game, they roll the bowls into these. Now, there was a book a while ago by Dan Wetzel, Jeff Passan, and Josh Peter, all wrote this book called Death to the BCS. I don't know if that's something you ever read, Nick, but it kind of broke down how we could get to a 16-team football playoff and why, you know, economically it could work and why it could work. You know, a lot of people complain about the point that a lot of people like to make against a potential expanded playoff is that the playoff would happen when the kids aren't in school. That, you know, it would have to happen over that winter break. Right. March Madness is 64 teams, and it happens in the middle of spring break every year. So what are we really talking about with that nonsense, right? That's just like a sweep under the rug argument. That's just you trying to tick things off to not have this, in my opinion, for the people that don't like it. But I do like that you're coming around. So tell me, what was the thing that kind of, you know, got you to rethink your stance on this? Because like I said, I think as early as last year, you were like, man, I kind of like the old traditional way.
Yeah. And, you know, you could ask me tomorrow and I might have a different opinion on it. But
of course.
So I'm sort of an analytics-based person. Obviously, I do all this stuff with team ratings and player ratings and all of that. And so a lot of the people that approach college football in a similar way to me look at, you know, when it comes time to determine who's worthy of the playoff, what teams are best versus what teams are most deserving. And I actually differ with a lot of, you know, otherwise fairly like-minded people. I think that things like conference championships and stuff like that should matter. I believe that, you know, you're playing for a title and those are traditional things, even though people have changed conferences however often throughout the last century. But, you know, I think that's a good entry point. I think you're playing for a conference championship. It makes a certain amount of sense. We've got five Power Five conferences, and if you win your conference championship, you know, to me, it makes sense. Get an automatic bid to the playoff, similar to what you see in the NCAA basketball tournament. That would also allow a group of five teams, so you could do the highest ranked group of five team by the playoff committee, similar to what we see with the New Year's Six, and then two at large bids. And you know, that is sort of where we would still have the, you know, back and forth and who should get in, the, you know, the final two, first two in, first two out, all that sort of stuff. And it would let in some teams that perhaps weren't the most deserving, but you would get a situation where I think every team that is deserving would be in there. And then college football isn't the most, there's not very much parity in college football. So I don't think it's super likely that we would see, you know, an 8 seed or a 7 seed go through and win all that often. But, you know, that sort of fringy fifth ranked team, something like that, we would be treated to a lot of interesting games. And I think it, you know, more football's better than less football. And I think, you know, going to 8 at this point makes a certain amount of sense.
I mean, 8's where it starts, you know, and then we would move up after that, of course. But I just think it makes a lot of sense overall. You know, I love the conference championships too. I love anything that, you know, like you said, kind of at the end of your statement there, more football, you know, more football is better. I think that obviously adding games, you would have to add incentive for the players to want to play in those added games, because we already have, you know, star players that if they're not playing for a championship, want to sit out games. I think an expanded playoff, even if it's just up to 6 teams or 8 teams, would curb a little bit of that. Because, you know, if Michigan ends up in, you know, the Sugar Bowl, which is not in the playoffs, there are some guys that just aren't flat out going to play in that game. They don't need to be bothered by it because they know they're going to get paid in the NFL. But if you're playing for a team goal, not just winning the Sugar Bowl, that wouldn't matter because it's not a playoff game. But, you know, like Jerry Jeudy this year played his bowl game, right? He played what game was that? Was that the Orange Bowl that Alabama was in against Michigan,
Citrus,
right?
Citrus Bowl, I think.
Citrus Bowl. There you go. So Jerry Jeudy played in that game. He didn't have incentive to play in that game. He played in it because he wanted to play with his teammates one more time. You have plenty of guys on the opposite end, and even guys like Nick Bosa, who was at Ohio State. He got hurt midway through the year, and he was like, yeah, okay, I'm done with this college stuff. I know I'm going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. I'm going to get millions of dollars. So what incentive do I have to play not only in the bowl games, but the rest of this season? You know, a lot of guys play for their teammates, but a lot of guys are trying to get paid. So sure. I think that it gets a lot of those guys more involved in wanting to play in those games. Plus, if you were paying them, now they have more incentive. You know, so maybe it's something the money generated by a large tournament. I mean, college basketball is a lot of fun to watch, but I would say that 90% of the college basketball watching audience happens during the March Madness tournament. Would you agree with that, Nick?
Yeah, I think it's certainly along those lines. I mean, like you mentioned, the NBA going up against the NFL, college basketball is in a similar situation. They go up not only against the NFL and the NBA, but college football as well. So you've got people who are very, you know, tied into their universities and will watch pretty much anything that has to do with their, you know, school of choice. But even that, you know, diehard fan might have to pick and choose between a basketball game and a football game. So, yeah, college basketball, the early portion certainly gets overlooked. And, you know, then the later it goes, the casual fan hops in later as well. So I think you're absolutely right.
And if you had that type of a tournament for college football, which is the most popular of all of the college sports, I think the audience is going to be enormous. The TV ratings are going to be huge. You're going to have more at the gate as well. I mean, as long as we're still doing that at some point in the near future, having fans at games, of course. Right. But I mean, I just think it's a win for everyone. I feel like it's a way to pay the players a respectable amount. I think it's better for the audience, and it does things like, and no offense intended here to anyone who graduated from Central Florida, but the crap of Central Florida declaring themselves national champions is just nonsense, and it's not all their fault either. It's because the tournament is so small, it's so hard to get in, and strength of schedule being a huge part of that. Now, you got to play your conference, but if you don't schedule hard enough teams outside of your conference the year that your team is good, and how the hell are you supposed to know when that's going to be when you're making these? I mean, I think Alabama and Texas scheduled two games we played like 2032 and 2034 or something. I don't even know if I'm going to be kicking then. You know what I mean? So no one knows what the future holds when they're making those schedules so far out in time, and you just can't make a tournament. So I think if you win your conference, get an automatic bid into an expanded playoff tournament just makes a ton of sense. So I'm all the way for it. I mean, Nick, I couldn't be more happy that you have kind of come around on that. Like you said, I'm not going to hold you to it. There's a lot of traditionalists. A lot of people think that the bigger the tournament, the less the regular season matters, which, you know, there's a grain of truth in there. But I think that we can still talk about the last couple at-large bids. I remember how many conferences do we have now, Nick? Do we have 10 or 11?
So there's 10 total, Power 5, G5, and then you've got a half dozen or so independents.
Right. So so we have the, those plus, you know, probably an independent would make it, which most years is going to be Notre Dame. Not all the time, plus teams can leave conferences, and maybe we'd see teams leave conferences to get a better shot at making the playoff. So that's something that could potentially happen, but you get those 10 bids plus an independent, and then you have 5 at large. I think we can talk just as much about those 5 at large as we do about who's going to be ranked 4 and who's going to be ranked 5 and just left out of the college football playoff right now. So I think that there's plenty of talk to do about that. And is that kind of, I feel like that was kind of your sticking point as far as not wanting a playoff previously. Am I right on that, Nick?
Well, I am a bit of a traditionalist. I mean, the other things that came to my mind with changing the sport, I have disliked the game being less geographic. I mean, I would think, and you know, the current situation we're in might potentially impact this. You might see a move for some conferences to or some teams specifically to decide they want to be a little closer to home, like a West Virginia may, you know, try if they had the opportunity, limit travel and things like that, not play as many games.
You're saying that Texas and West Virginia shouldn't be rivals?
You know, I don't think so. So you know, moving maybe to a little bit more geographical based and you know, fewer neutral site games for, you know, the big kickoff games, the ones played in Atlanta, the ones played in, you know, Houston or whatever. Less of that, more games on campus. And then we'd also love to see more. And I think we're getting a little bit of this, but more of the big time matchups, like you were talking about the Texas versus Alabama, that sort of thing. So I think that there's a way maybe to combine all of those, and it could make sense, you know, help with a playoff where you're maybe you take one of the games against, you know, if you're an SEC team against your Sun Belt opponent, take that off. Or some, you know, a lot of people want to see elimination of the games against FCS competitions. That opens up a whole other economic discussion. But, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. But I think that there are some traditional measures, some steps to go more in a traditional way might actually help the playoff expand, oddly as it sounds.
Well, we have to hit a break. But when we come back, we'll wrap this up, and we'll get to the tight ends that we didn't talk about last week as far as CFF goes. So stick with us. We'll be right back after this. It's In This League on the Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
In This League.
I thought we were going to be just friends.
What? Friends listen to
In This League.
In the dark.
Endless love time. You guys know what that means. It's the end of In This League on the Sports Grid for today on Friday. But remember, we're coming back at you with three more hours tomorrow on Saturday. So you got 3 hours, two with me and the Welsh and one with me and KC Bubba. So you'll be tired of me by this. But don't worry, you get a day off on Sunday. No ITL on FNTSY on Sunday. We'll give you guys a break. You know, everyone has to rest every once in a while. And then the Welsh and I will be back on here for you guys on Monday, KC Bubba on Tuesday, and then Nick will be back with me next Friday as well, unless anything changes. But like I said, you can follow us all on Twitter, at Bogman Sports for me, at CFB Winning Edge for Nick, and at Is It the Welsh for the Welsh. But we were kind of wrapping up the you know, I didn't even say anything else that I would change about college football, Nick, outside of the playoff expansion is the big one for me. And obviously getting players paid, and I'm not talking about millions of dollars in endorsements and all that stuff, and I'm not saying to do it at the expense of programs or anything. I know that's kind of the first thing that the anti-payment people jump in on. I just think that they're generating so much money for the university that they're employees. They're not really students. And we've seen plenty of examples of these guys leaving with degrees that they don't deserve because they had to, you know, they had to maintain a way to stay on the football team to make the university money. So it just makes sense to me to pay them as employees instead of students in a lot of cases. Not every case, but in a lot of cases. But those are really the two big ones for me. I don't know that I would change anything on the field. I might do 2 feet in, 2 feet inbounds instead of one, and I might do you have to touch a player down instead of they're down if they fall. So, because I kind of don't like those screen passes where a guy slips on the grass and his knee touches and he's down mm-hmm. there. Those are the plays that really annoy me against like the NFL and stuff like that. But I think for most part, I want to keep the play the same, but it really expand the playoffs. Is there anything else you'd want to change to the game?
I don't think so. Nothing really on the field. I mean, I'm a college football fan first and foremost, and you know, I have a background in high school football coaching, which follow this very similar rule. So I like the 1 foot in and don't have to touch down, you know, all those sort of things. I'm fine with that. It's taken me a little bit to get used to the new clock rule, where the clock doesn't always stop if you go out of bounds until, like, you know, what is it, the final 2 minutes or whatever now. So I have always been just sort of a college rules guy, and nothing else really jumps to mind as far as you know, kickoff changes or other, you know, special team safety measures. Nothing I think is an immediate need. From that standpoint, I think overall it's a pretty good game, and it's, you know, spent a lot of time over a lot of years trying to get it right, and there are certainly some improvements that could be made, but I think at this point nothing too major.
Yeah, and these are little points that we're talking about. Like, you know, I to be honest, I didn't think we would see a college football playoff until I was close to my deathbed. So to have it now is extremely impressive to me. And the talk about ADs wanting an expansion and all that stuff, excuse me, already is almost surprising to me. And it excites me about the future for the game. But, you know, you can only tweak so much before it doesn't start looking like the game that you're used to. So as far as the on-the-field products, minor tweaks. Off the field, stuff to just get us more, right? That's all I want. But, Nick, we... You know, and you threatened us with an hour of tight end talk last week, but I think I've saved it for just the last segment here. But I love looking at your rankings once again, because I think with you, you have no fear. And you're the black sheep of rankers at the top of tight ends as well. Everyone else has Kylan Granson from SMU as their number one. And you have not only have Kyle Pitts from Florida at one, but you have Granson at four. Bichelle is coming back. Reggie Roberson, should keep Granson open over the middle. He seems like a pretty good pick for number one tight end. I haven't done my rankings yet, but sell us on Pitts and why Granson is at four.
So Pitts is a personal favorite of mine. And when it comes to the tight end position, I am looking for athleticism first and foremost. And Kyle Pitts is a wide receiver who plays tight end. I think that he established himself really as a weapon last year for Florida, had an excellent year. You know, every Saturday night when you and I would record and go over the weekly numbers, it always seemed like Kyle Pitts got a mention on, you know, hey, he's sitting there. He had another, you know, another decent game. And he caught 54 passes last year, led the team, and he's going to be somebody that's targeted. He's a big target, 6'5". He's added some weight. He's listed at 235. Wouldn't be surprised if when the season starts, that's, you know, closer to 240, 245, something like that. So I love his athleticism. I love that they feature him in the offense. I know that he didn't put up as many yards, didn't get as many touchdowns as Granson, who I do also like. I mean, I did put him fourth, but similar to our conversation in weeks past, I mean, I think that the top of these rankings in pretty much across the board are really tight. I mean, I don't think there's a very big gap between one and four in tight end, similar to I don't think there's a big gap at wide receiver between one and four. I think that this is a pretty good group, and I actually think it's deeper than maybe it was last year for sure. I think there are some intriguing options, you know, Granson being one. He kind of a little bit came out of nowhere. He was a transfer from Rice that didn't play in 2018 and you know, sort of came on last year, somewhat surprisingly, because, you know, when you think of the traditional air raid that Sonny Dykes ran at Louisiana Tech and Cal, and then also his offensive coordinator last year, Rhett Lashley, who for a long time had been Gus Malzahn's right-hand man at Auburn, the tight end was a little bit of a forgotten kind of guy. And so I don't know that we necessarily expected him to jump up and become one of the top tight ends in CFF, but maybe that is part of the reason why I think there could be some regression to the mean, just because it did almost seem like he jumped up out of nowhere. But, you know, I certainly think that he's a top five tight end. I think he's, you know, maybe four is too low. I'm not going to argue with anybody that put him number one. I just personally think that Kyle Pitts, from an athleticism standpoint, is really just sort of a special player. Had a great year last year. Was just a redshirt freshman last year. So he's you know, only going to get better in my eyes. And the other two guys I've got above Granson, I think Pat Freiermuth is a very similar type player at Penn State. He's bigger than Pitts. He's thicker than Pitts, but he's also very athletic. I know there's a little bit of a concern with the change in offensive coordinator because Kurt Soroka, who came over from Minnesota, didn't really utilize the tight ends much at Minnesota. So that's a little bit of a worry for, you know, probably CFF players. But I am a believer that, for the most part, offensive coordinators are, you know, they're smart. They know that they've got a weapon and they're going to find a way to use them.
I like that you said for the most part. I'd like you to list off all the dumb offensive coordinators.
I mean, you know, these guys make millions of dollars for a reason. Multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars for a reason. And you're not going to be the offensive coordinator at Penn State and squander one of your best players. Pat Freiermuth, I think, is certainly going to be utilized there much more than we saw Minnesota tight ends in the past couple of years. But my third guy was another name that we pretty much every week, it was like, why aren't people picking up Matt Bushman at BYU? He was
that one. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I remember it was almost you felt like pulling your hair out. You're like, why is this guy still under 50%?
Yeah, I mean, he led the team in receiving yards. He led the team, tied for the team lead in touchdowns. It was only four, but BYU also started, I believe it was three quarterbacks last year because of injury. So if Zach Wilson's able to stay healthy, if he's able to be the guy and hold on to that job, I think Bushman's got a chance to see his, you know, targets go up and basically everything across the board. He's a guy that could have left early for the NFL, decided to come back, and I think he's also, you know, poised for a big year. So I would not, you know, if somebody jumped out early and got a tight end before I did, they took Granson, you know, that's fine. I think there are three other options that are just as good, if not maybe slightly better, just from an athleticism standpoint.
Now, a thing that I didn't like on your list was that you had two Aggies at tight end. I mean, of course, look, these guys are both super talented, though. So, you know, two Texas A&M Aggies in your top 12. Baylor Cup fractured his leg last year in August, but he was an incredibly high recruit and was getting all kinds of hype going into 2019. I mean, it was I remember in slow drafts, our guy Justin had Baylor Cup like all over the place, and then he literally broke his leg like 2 weeks before the season started. So In a lot of slow drafts, he had already been drafted and people were counting on him and out for the year. But Jalen Weidermeyer made a big impact for the Aggies. He had 32 catches, 447 yards, and six scores. And while for a lot of people that may not sound like a ton, for tight ends in college, that's an enormous year. So you think both these guys can coexist and put up decent numbers?
So you floated this out to me in the, you know, the last few days, and it was a great point, because I do think having both of them in the top 12 was a little too bullish, and so I've since revised, but I kept Weidermeyer at number 7. I think that he proved to be a go-to guy last year. He caught 30 balls, he scored 6 touchdowns, led the Aggies. He's going to, you know, if Kupp is healthy and he's able to come back, it's going to eat into his maybe overall production a little bit. But one thing that I think surprised me a little bit, because Weidermeyer is such a big guy. I mean, he's listed at 260, and that was as a true freshman last year. So he's a guy that's probably going to get even bigger. He led Texas A&M in yards per catch. I mean, he caught only 14 yards per catch. You would hope that they would have a little bit more explosive ability in the wide receiving core. But I liked that Weidermeyer could stretch the field a little bit, but also he's so big and physical that he would often break that first tackle, sort of shake off whoever it was that was matched up against him and get extra yardage. So I think that's valuable. He was a go-to guy in the red zone. I think that they're going to target him a lot in the red area. He's going to have an opportunity to put up good touchdown numbers again. Baylor Kupp is certainly a special player. He's very athletic. He's an inch taller than Weidermeyer and you know, does have an edge in athleticism when healthy. Haven't seen him fully healthy, but everything at the college level, but everything that we've heard about him before is certainly has an opportunity to be a special player. But I did have to drop him a little bit. I thought you made a great point. And for some reason, I ended up with my favorite tight end from last season outside my top 12. Had to bump Brevin Jordan back up because Miami, you know, he talk about athleticism. I mean, he is about as good as it gets at the tight end position. He's a smaller target. He's only 6'3", but he's a player similar to – who was it at Washington last year? Bryant?
Hunter Bryant.
He's the same type player. I mean, he's a guy that can play a lot of different roles. He's not just a traditional tight end. You can put him in the backfield. You can put him in the slot. Yeah, you know, he's a matchup issue for a lot of players, so for a lot of teams. So I do think that he's certainly a top 10 tight end this year and probably needs to be a little bit closer to that top 5 because, like I said before, Rhett Lashley called the plays and had put Grantson an opportunity to be this year's number one tight end in the preseason. And Brevin Jordan's now his tight end at Miami. So you have to think he's going to try to use him in a similar way and use his athletic ability and matchup, put him in position to be successful, put up some big yardage. So need to not forget about Brevin Jordan.
And you brought him up a little bit, if I'm remembering correctly, last week when I asked you about De'Aaron King and the wide receiver core at Miami. They lost a lot this season. Jeff Thomas going to the NFL, a couple guys graduating, and Brevin Jordan might be the number one option. I mean, DJ Dallas was also a nice receiving option out of the backfield for Miami last season as well. So Brevin Jordan, who I think is probably already better than Hunter Bryant, who I like a lot going into the draft this season, but I think Brevin Jordan's probably already a little bit better. Plus, he can be a security blanket for a guy like De'Aaron King as he learns a new system. I mean, that's the one thing that worries me about De'Aaron King is you go from this giant spread offense at Houston to a much more compact, close together, taking more snaps from under center type of an offense in Miami. So, he could easily be De'Aaron King's number one target. But that is going to wrap it up for us this week. Remember, like I said, please go and check out all of Nick's great work at CFB Winning Edge. And check out that podcast as well. I host it with him and our buddy Xavier Trish. You can follow us all on the Twitter at Bogman Sports for me, at CFB Winning Edge for Nick, and at Xavier underscore Trish, T-R-I-C-H-E for Xavier. Nick does great work, and you know, thank you for coming on again this week, and we will get something ready to talk about some CFF next week as well, and check out his Patreon, patreon.com/CFBWinningEdge. Check out my Patreon, patreon.com/ITLArmy, and we will see you guys tomorrow and then again on Monday. Take it easy, everybody. Stay safe out there.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.